recall that in line with our commitment to the nature of our democracy as both participatory and representatives, we decided that we want to have a workshop before we proceed as public representatives. We have had a workshop which was well attended, and the media monitors are informing us that the workshop was well received. All the stakeholders are satisfied that when we said we want meaningful participation, we meant it, and they have bought into the process, and they want to work with us, because this is a process that can break or build our country. And our generation has a responsibility to build, not to break the country. And the success of that workshop means that we are on the road to build, not to break. Now, today's the purpose of today's meeting is to receive a briefing by legal services on the themes that emerged from the constitutional dialogue on the land ownership, to offer members an opportunity to tell us if legal services have correctly captured what transpired there, and if there are omissions or gaps, to fill those gaps. And the purpose of today is not to discuss the options, because we want to make sure that once we have agreed on the themes, we offer all political parties, big or small, an opportunity to go and develop options, so that when we discuss options, all political parties must have an equal opportunity to be heard, so that when a decision is taken, we make sure that they are taken in the true spirit of a multi-party parliament. So we are not going to be using numbers to disadvantage any party, however small. And also, we are going to be mindful of the fact that as public representatives, we don't have the monopoly of wisdom. We want to carry our people along with us, because all parties that are represented in this parliament, they were elected by a section of the people of South Africa, and we have a responsibility to respect all opinions of all our people, regardless of how small the party that represents them. So as chairperson, I'm going to ensure that all political parties, regardless of their size, are given equal weight in this meeting. So for today, all that we want to do is to receive the briefing and entertain the briefing, and then if anyone feels that something which was supposed to be here is not here, and then we entertain that so that at the next meeting then we can then begin a new process of looking at submissions from the parties. And I also want to reiterate our common commitment that we are going to finish this process on time, and that time is the end of March. I also want to also take this opportunity to thank the legal services for having been well prepared and to have made a presentation that left nothing to be desired. But in particular, I would want to, in absentia, thank Judge Johan van der Westhuizen, who not only was given short notice, and I purposefully didn't brief him because I didn't want anybody to say that I briefed him to conduct the meeting in one way or another. So I met him in the meeting, and he conducted the meeting very well, and I hope that the office will send him a thank you letter. He did a sterling job like a good judge of our people. Having said that, I want to ask Advocate van der Merwe to take us through the themes that the legal services has prepared.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, members. So what we have done is we looked at everything that was said at the workshop, and sometimes a theme might have been one sentence by one person, but as the Chair indicated, every view was to be heard. So from that, and also sitting with the content advisors and getting inputs from the committee secretaries, we have come up with these themes that arose from the workshop. The first theme or thought that was that came up, and we tried to sort of take them through the subsections, was that deprivation need not be touched. The deprivation does not deal with compensation, and therefore that is not the subsection one is not something that has to be amended. And on this thing, on the slide, you will see there's a blue font. That is just what we could provide from a legal point of view to say that we agree that subsection 1 does in fact not deal with compensation, because you do not have to give compensation in the case of deprivation. The next theme was the meaning and the impact of the phrase without compensation. And what we had here, Professor Du Plessis from the Northwest University indicated that should the committee use the phrase without compensation in the bill, that would amount to confiscation, to allowing confiscation. And she indicated that expropriation always is accompanied with compensation. She also raised the concern that international obligations of South Africa requires that expropriation must be accompanied by compensation. And she then proposed that rather than using the words without compensation, that it rather be worded as compensation that has no value. Now, the research that we have done on this, we're not sure that we fully agree that without compensation means confiscation, because the word confiscation is used in relation to punishment, to crime, things like that. And this is not what we're dealing with here. We're not dealing with an offense. We're dealing with expropriation. And also, it is not that expropriation always is accompanied by compensation. There was a court case from the appellate division in as far back as 1915 where the court indicated that, of course, Parliament can make legislation that indicates that there should not be compensation when something is expropriated. The one thing that we have found that we would like the committee to take to make sure that the committee pay attention to is the international obligations that South Africa has. And we looked at the number of articles, the number of persons who wrote about this, and what we could ascertain is that there are treaties where when where the treaty deals with property and it talks about expropriation, those treaties require adequate compensation. So there's also the a customary international law that also speaks to this aspect. And there's lots of rules and how the compensation must be determined and so on. However, what we have also found was that in 2012, the Department of Trade and Industry identified that South Africa's these treaties, some of them bilateral investment treaties, some of them, I think the Africa Charter is one, that these treaties had terms in them that did not, that were not conducive to South Africa's development obligations as set out in our constitution. So, in fact, Trade and Industry has already, back then in 2012, started on a process where they have either amended the treaties or our contribution to the treaty. And, in fact, one treaty was amended to the extent that it excluded international arbitration. So there has been a lot of work done around international obligations. But, of course, I'm not an expert in this, and I would really recommend to the committee that perhaps at the next meeting we invite someone from Trade and Industry to just come and explain to the members exactly what are we looking at here. Because as we see it, we do not see this issue of international obligations being a hurdle to the bill. We don't see that as being the case. We think the bill can proceed. What we perhaps just need to be cautious about is then the wording. If the wording will impact on our obligations, then perhaps we should not say without compensation. Perhaps we can say compensation at is possible at a nil rand value. It says the same thing, but if that will assist in international obligations complying with them, then that is something that could be considered. But like I also say, I think it's perhaps something that needs to be unpacked, and I would recommend that we perhaps then invite someone from Trade and Industry in that regard. The next theme, and actually land comes in two themes, but the first theme is the meaning of land. And there was a view that the word land should be fleshed out. We should look at the definition of the expropriation bill, and that land must definitely include buildings. Now, we then went and did some research on whether the word land is unclear and whether there could be any interpretation that would exclude any improvements on the land. And our conclusion is that land includes improvements. When we looked at all the land reform legislation, there was no definition for land. Yet all the reform legislation would speak about land. And that means that it is accepted that land has an ordinary dictionary meaning. And when you look at that, it means an earth, you can look at agricultural properties, rural, urban properties, and it would include the improvements on it. The expropriation bill itself also does not define land. It uses the phrase improvements on land in the text itself. So the recommendation that we would do is that the word land is broad enough, it is clear, it is, has an established meaning, but if there is some discomfort, then perhaps the word can be expanded so that we say land including any improvements thereon. The next issue that affects land, next theme rather, that affected land, is that expropriation without compensation must apply to all property. What we have here is from Chidi attorneys, as you'll see there, they indicated that expropriation without compensation should be applied to all cases, but that homes should be excluded. And Cusato asked the question if it includes resources. There was a proposal from the EFF, and we included this in the theme, that expropriation without compensation should apply to all property. So there were all of these issues about it. This is, however, a policy decision, so there's not a legal argument that we can give. But what we would just want the committee members to caution themselves about is that property, as it is protected by Section 25, is extremely broad. In fact, our courts have actually said that they do not want to define property and would rather apply the term to each case and to the facts of each case. But so far, property has been seen to include movable property. This was in an F&B, National Bank versus West Bank, actually trading as West Bank versus the Commissioner of SARS, where it was agreed that movable property such as vehicles are included in the word property in Section 25. It also includes intangibles such as debt, copyright, all your intellectual properties. It also includes new rights such as your state subsidies, pension, and also future rights. So looking at shares and things like that. So our caution is just that we need to keep in mind that if we expand the application of expropriation without compensation to all property, then it will affect quite a large number of types of property. The next theme, I worded the heading "a need for certainty" in the wording and to urgently complete the process. So from Cusato's side, there was a request that the amendment as well as the expropriation bill should be prioritized because of land hunger. AgriSA, of course, did not support any amendment, but they did make a comment regarding your foreign direct investment implications, the issue of downgrading, the fact that property rights must be protected. And of course, the judge pointed out, but expropriation without compensation, there's an interpretation that says it's already included in the Constitution. So why has that not caused a downgrade? But AFASA also pointed out that this bill is needed urgently, because we need stability. The law of the country needs to be certain. So that is why I've grouped these together. And from what we can recommend on this, to have certainty in the law, is that the bill in the end includes an enabling clause that will require national legislation to set out the criteria for when land may be expropriated without compensation. That will then ensure certainty in the law, and that will allow then for the stability that AFASA was calling for. The next theme This also arises from the proposal put forward by the EFF. And what was proposed by them was to replace subsections 1, 2, and 3 with a constitutional obligation on the state to redress imbalances of the past and to equitably redistribute all resources. So, yes, of course, it is possible to place such an obligation on the state. If you think about other sections in the Constitution, section 26, subsection 2, places that obligation in respect of housing. But if we look at section 25, subsection 5 already places an obligation on the state. It reads, the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions which enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. So there's already an obligation placed similar to section 26.2 in the way that it's worded. So the recommendation here is that the section 25 already contains such an obligation on the state, and that it then probably isn't necessary to add another obligation in the same section. Another theme is that there should be an expansion on the meaning of compensation. So the request was that compensation should not necessarily always be in money. It could be, it sounded to me like the person was referring to an exchange, you have a house here, we have a house there. But compensation does not necessarily mean money. Yes, normally if you think about compensation, it's the first type of compensation that comes to mind. But compensation could include an exchange or other non-monetary benefits. So it is already included in the word itself. And in the context of expropriation, I struggle to actually think of practical applications where you would use exchange. But the point is that it is already possible under Section 25. So our recommendation is that it's already possible and it does not require a further amendment. And then another theme was to provide for a different body to determine the amounts of compensation. And in general, proposal was that the Valuer General's office should actually determine the amount of compensation. And then the general view was that the courts should rather be in a review position. In other words, not the first decision maker, but rather to consider the decisions on review. So first off, from what we can confirm here is just that courts are quite broadly defined in the Constitution. It includes, it starts from your constitutional court right through to magistrates' court and any other court established by an act of parliament. So there are a lot of bodies that would be captured within the word courts as it currently is in section 25, but it does not mean that another body can't be given this obligation. So it is possible. The one thing that we must just be cautious about, and I did not get the impression from the persons who proposed this that they had in mind to totally oust the powers of the court. But that is just the one thing that we must be careful about. We cannot oust the powers of the court to review or to consider on appeal. So we can provide for a body of first instance as long as it can go to the court. But other than that, there's not really something that we can say in law about this. In the end, it is a policy decision whether this should be included or not. Then there was a question on the ownership of land. Again, from the proposal of the EFF, we took this theme that there's a need to address the ownership of land so that the state should be the custodian of all resources, which includes land, minerals, and water. From FASA, there was a concern about this proposal. They were saying that you cannot have all the land in the hands of the state. You need to allow black people to own land. Just quickly, it's not on the slide, but we must just keep in mind that minerals and water is already in the custody of the state. So it's only land that is excluded at the moment. The rest are already provided for. But in the end, this is not a legal question that we can express an opinion on it. It is, in the end, a policy decision for the committee to consider. The next proposal related to subsection 7, where there was a request to either remove subsection 7 in totality or to remove the date of 1913. But again, this is not something that's a legal question. It will in the end be a decision for the committee to decide. It's a policy matter. Then lastly, there was a call for overall land reform measures. In other words, things that will happen outside of the amendment to Section 25. Calling for the expropriation bill to be considered urgently. Calling for all the legislation that is currently before Parliament that deals with land reform to be prioritised, to properly implement the existing land reform legislation, strengthening ESTA, developing a Land Records Act. So all of these issues were also raised during the workshop, but of course these cannot be resolved within Section 25. However, it doesn't mean that the committee must ignore these calls, and what we would recommend is that when the committee reports on the bill, that the committee can say, look, during the workshop there was a request for the following to happen, and that can then be a part of the committee's report when it actually reports on the bill. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Let me just place it on record that our office has been approached by the Africana Bond, who say that the Africana Bond is the former Bruder Bond, that they support this process and they are interested in being part of it, and we have invited them to make an input in the process. We have also been approached by some kings and queens who say that they are not necessarily part of the National House of Traditional Leaders. They want to be given an opportunity to input, so we will be communicating with them through the Department of COCTA to say that they are welcome, because before we even finalize the themes, we must have had everybody who has an input to make. So the Africana Bond would be listened to, would be given the opportunity, the kings and queens will be given an opportunity, and any other stakeholder that may be intending to approach us. So we are not going to close anybody out. So, honorable members, there is a report from legal services, and Dr. Melder by welcome. He had not heard what he said, but I think the document is where he himself can lease, and the idea is that as there is what in the Werkswinkel gebeurd, but not in the document verscheen, he is free om te zeggen dat moet en gesleed wordt of eet gesleed wordt. So he is baie welkom. Dank u.
Thank you, Chairperson. You must take our colleagues into consideration. We need some translation services now.
Just welcome. Welcoming Dr. Melder to say that he came late, but the documents are before him. So the idea is really that anything that is in, which is not supposed to be in, let's hear if there's something that is not in, which is supposed to be in, let's put it in. But I want to really open the floor for honorable members to engage with the presentation. But thank legal services led by Advocate Van der Merwe for doing good work and always on time. The floor is open. Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for that presentation. Unfortunately, I was not well, so I couldn't attend the workshop. But I'm going to start with the last slide, where we address some of the land reform measures. And we talk about evictions that are continuing at the moment. Should we also not consider very seriously, based on what is happening, particularly in the Western Cape, a moratorium on the sale of land while we're dealing with this issue of land restitution, because prime land continues to be sold while we are still trying to address this issue of restitution? I'll then go now back to the first slide. If we look at the judgment in the matter of Suma and Jack PTY Mines Limited versus Union Government, and it's very clear there that it says that in terms of expropriation, it's a legal term that does not always require compensation in any event. So, then the question that arises is this: when we talk about international obligations, I think we must be mindful of something. And I think I'm going to cover two aspects in one here. When you talk about expropriation of land, remember when expropriation of land took place years ago, it took place with improvements and without improvements. So there was no consideration. So my interpretation of land is whether it has, because if you take a 10-hectare piece of land with one little property on there, what are you talking about? You know, are we saying we're going to exclude that piece of land now because there's a property on there? So I think the emphasis here should be that it is land, whether it has an improvement or not, because that's basically what happened when it was expropriated in the first place. We seem to express concern about the international community, but one thing that we are forgetting is this, that what we want to do now is deal with the injustices of the past. Okay? And the international community needs to be reminded that what we are doing is trying to deal with the imbalances and what has happened in the past, but but what we are doing when we want to take away the land in terms of the expropriation, it has happened before. So if it was okay then, why is it not okay now? The only thing is we are doing it in a balanced way. We are doing it in a manner where we want to ensure that we address the inequality in the country. So that's the other issue. I've dealt with the issue with the... I'm not comfortable with the issue that the state must own land. My interpretation is that the state is the custodian of all land. And if it is required at any given time, if land is required, government is able to expropriate the land if it is required for roads, if it is required for whatever purpose. So, but we're not really in support of it. I'll stop there for now, and I'll come back if necessary.
Do you think that the National Assembly was wise to separate land from property when it says expropriation of land without compensation and not including property, because a child born 500 years thereafter who has built something there, when you take the land and you take the property of that child, Is that not another form of injustice?
Can I respond to that, Jim? Yeah. I think then the question we need to ask ourselves, like the example I've given, if you've taken a 5 or 10 hectare of land and there is a property already put on there, if you're talking about a particular, let's take a commercial piece of ground, and you've got this land with a property there, then what are you going to do? Are we going to leave the property there and take the land? Are we going to take a portion of the land? Are we going to export it? What are we going to do? Another thing, what I'm saying is, it's not to now create another injustice to what has basically happened. But I think we must be mindful of the fact that very many pieces of land that we're going to talk about are going to have some kind of improvements on it. We cannot run away from that fact. So how are we going to deal with that in terms of those improvements that are, and then, friends, coming back to basically what you're saying, Chair. But it's going to be a very difficult situation, because I can tell you now, if you talk about commercial land, for instance, almost in its entirety, you're going to find some kinds of improvements there. So we can have some kind of difficulty there in terms of that. So I'm mindful of the fact that we do not want to do what happened many, many years ago and target people and want to take away their properties and things. But also we must be mindful of something, that when this happened many years ago, prime pieces, what today would be prime pieces of land and properties, and if you look at some of them in the central Durban of West Street, and when these are the properties, valuable properties that were taken, land were taken away, wood properties. So we must be mindful of that as well. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm going to mostly speak to process. It's correct that currently the state is the custodian of all water in South Africa. It's objectively correct that all water is under the custodianship of the state, and whoever wants to harvest water for one purpose or another should get a permission of the state under certain conditions. And it is correct that mineral resources, all the mineral resources in South Africa are under the custodianship of the state as well. So the $2.5 trillion worth of the mineral resources that are not touched are under the custodianship of the state. That is what the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act says. And you would recall that when the MPRDA was passed into law, there were attempts to challenge its constitutionality. And it was affirmed as a constitutional and legitimate piece of legislation. And it was meant to achieve a certain purpose, because you had private companies, the Anglo-Americans, were owning the minerals that were not even dug by anyone. You find a private company saying that they own the entire platinum belt in Skukuni, which in terms of basic redress, this cause cannot be justified. So water is under the custodianship of the state, minerals are under the custodianship of the state, and the same argument is being raised now, that when we say that let us have the state as the custodian of all land, the same false alarms are being raised that you're going to cause a crisis, there won't be access to land and all of those things there. By the way, that is the only way you will be able to equitably redistribute land. Because if you are going to try to redistribute land by taking from John to give to Zaman, like piece by piece, it will take you 100 years to redistribute 30% of the land. It will just replicate what we experienced in the first 25 years of elections that includes everyone. Because although there was an attempt to redistribute land, the problem was that you had to go and identify a piece of land which was owned by a small family called Malamala Game Reserve in the Bushbuck Ridge area. and then pay billions of rand, and there's a long legal process. So even with the expropriation, even if you've got the without compensation component, if you're going to do it piece by piece, you won't be able to redistribute the land successfully, because each and every case of expropriation will be subjected to litigation and unnecessary processes that might delay that. Why me? Why are you choosing my land? Why not my neighbor? And all of those other things there. Even if the without composition component is there, you might have that. But if we agree as Parliament that let us have the legitimately elected state and established state, which has got rules that are very clearly defined, that is balanced by Parliament, that is balanced by the judiciary, become custodian of all land in the same way we're custodian of minerals. That is the only way we can then release the land to all those who are going to utilize it. It's not confiscation. It's a legitimate process that is specifically suited for South Africans' historical conditions where entire land was confiscated from the black majority and the way shifted into reserves. We said 7%, later on 13% of mostly barren land that doesn't produce anything. Mostly land that is not in the areas where economic activity is happening. There are very few African people who own land in areas which has got economic activities. So if you ever think that expropriation approach would work outside of us doing what we did to the mineral resources and water, then it's that is daydreaming. Because, Chair, in the government's own admission, only 8% of the intended 30% of land was redistributed in the first 25 years of this arrangement that we have from 1994. So if that is the pattern, if that is the pace of piece by piece, so it's 8% in 25 years, it will be 16% in 50 years. It will be 24% in 75 years. It will be 32% in 100 years. So the entire generation will fail to then deal with this historical injustice that has been inflicted on us through colonization and apartheid. So it's, I think, one of the issues that really, and the false alarms will be proven wrong once a parliamentary decision has been taken that the state is custodian of all land. I was talking about a state which has got checks and balances that is democratically established by the people of South Africa. That is the essence of what we talk about when we say, and what must be clear in the whole issue of the state being custodian of all land is that once the state has let the land to you to use for agricultural or residential purposes, it must guarantee security of tenure. So that one must be non-negotiable, that once the land has been let to you for residential, for agricultural purposes, the security of tenure must be guaranteed, that it must be impossible for now the custodian to come and say that, no, I've changed my mind, I want to take this house that we're in, it was a mistake, and all of those other things there. So the security of tenure has to be guaranteed for those who are going to utilize that land for residential purposes, for industrial purposes, and for agricultural purposes, for religious purposes as well. Like we should be able to guarantee the security of tenure without flinching about that principle, because you wouldn't want those who say that we approved the land for your father, but now as children you cannot continue to stay there because your father is no more there. It's one of the key principles that we might need to then safeguard in terms of these issues. And then now the issue, Che, I know we spoke about this in the last engagement. is that we are mandated to introduce a constitutional review bill. I'm pleading once again that perhaps we need to introduce that bill, because there's a separate process outside of just talking, of informing the bill's office to say that we want to introduce the constitutional amendment bill, and then deal with the text issues to say that, so that all these people whom you say are endorsing of this process and want to make contributions here, they come make inputs into a bill which would have been introduced in the parliament in terms of all of those issues. Now, we are the ones who, and we don't want to talk about this, but we are the ones who introduced the first motion that culminated in this process. And of course, was the debate was predominantly on the land question. The issue was to amend Section 25 of the Constitution. That is why this committee is mandated to change Section 25 of the Constitution. And I think that almost all of us, we got caught in the complexities of interchangeably utilizing land, property, and everything else. And I illustrated that if you check subsection 1, subsection 5, subsection 8 of section 25, there is somehow interchangeable usage of property and land. But the ultimate approach is to say, let us amend Section 25 of the Constitution to permit for expropriation without compensation. And if we think that such is going to be in conflict with the National Assembly, we can go back to the National Assembly to remandate this process so that we do not go off the mandate of the National Assembly. I do not think that we can have a problem. That is the understanding which even the Constitutional Review Committee had established around all these issues. I don't think that there are many other things that will be affected in terms of what is primarily needed. So let us engage in this process, bearing in mind that this is it's a redress obligation which Section 9.2 of the Constitution says we should engage in. As Parliament, that we should pass legislations that deliberately seek to redress the imbalances of the past that were brought about by colonialism and apartheid. And if we become reductionist, we will not be able to deal with these things properly. And you know, we didn't have the time to could entertain each and every submission in the workshop. So to say the state is custodian does not mean that black people will not have access to land, will not own. It doesn't mean that. So you know that if we were to use the minerals example, although there is very little transformation happening there, but you can point to 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 black-owned mines in the coal sector and other sectors, because the state can let those people mine. But if it was Anglo-American that was in ownership or was in, under the custodianship of those mineral rights, it was not going to happen. So the issue of ownership and control and security of tenure by black people, by black farmers, by black residential users or industrial users is guaranteed. Let us just deal with the issue of custodianship, and I don't think that it will be difficult to deal with it in that framework. Because when we say the state, we're talking about all of us within a defined framework of what we're busy with. Thank you very much.
Do you agree that what you are saying actually justifies why we should listen to all the voices? Because we are talking of the people of South Africa as a whole, and that as Parliament, we represent the people of South Africa as a whole through different political parties, small or big, and that therefore, before we come to determinations of whether we do this or that or not that, we should have afforded all the people of South Africa through their political parties and through the participatory democracy that we listen to them, as long as we meet the deadline set by Parliament. Would you not agree with that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Land does not guarantee economic activity. It's what you do on the land that may assist in economic activity. I had a quick look through the themes document. I was not able to peruse it earlier, but what I've seen so far is in line with what was discussed last week. I haven't seen something specific that jumps out that needs to be included, but I would like to have a look at that. Honourable Chairperson, the Honourable Shivambu started off by saying that he wanted to talk about process. And if we do process, then we are bound by the resolution adopted by the House. The whole idea of custodianship, which is a different way of saying the state should nationalize all land, is not part of that process. If the Honourable Shivambu would like to make that part of the process, then we have to go back to the House and ask for a different resolution. The second point I would like to point out is that if you talk about custodianship, then you should be even-handed. You cannot use custodianship at some stage to put all land under the control of the state. But once you've done that, then it doesn't suit you anymore. Then you want to guarantee tenure after that. If you put land under the custodianship of the state remains the custodian of all land. The last point I would like to make is the resolution adopted by the House is quite clear. It spoke about land, not property. I specifically asked that question last week, and I see it's in the documentation as well. The House, for whatever reason, decided that it referred to land, because as correctly being pointed out in this document, property goes way beyond. It's not only a building on a piece of land that is property. Property, the right of property goes way beyond the concept of property. So thank you, Chairperson. If we want to stick, and I agree with your premise that we should hear all voices and try to find a way forward and take into consideration the things that were said during the workshop last week, but if you want to stick to talk about in terms of process, then currently we are bound by the resolution adopted by the House, and other things will need a different political mandate, which we don't have at this stage. Thank you.
Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you.
It was raining.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I quite like Mapula, so it's fine. Thank you. You can all call me Mapula from now on. I'd like to support the inputs made by Mr. Mulder. If we want to work outside of the mandate given us, then we're going to have problems, and we would need to approach the House to have it changed or widened or whatever it is you need to do with it. But for the moment, we're bound by it. And again, I want to emphasize that the current mandate refers to land and nothing more than that. So we would be in serious jeopardy if we moved outside of those boundaries. But you've already made that point, and I agree with you.
Mandate means the powers conferred on you to do certain things. And if you go beyond the mandate, it means you are exceeding the powers. So we are acting in terms of a resolution of Parliament. So unless that mandate is changed, let's operate within the mandate and proceed as such. Honourable Shivambu, I'll come back to you. Let me first hear other honourable members. Honourable member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just few issues on the themes as presented. Also, I was not part of the workshop, but I have read and listened to what was presented here. The first one, on the issue of, in fact, let's start on the issue of the land. As Honorable Shivambu has said so, here we are trying to address the imbalances of the past. And what was taken from our forefathers was land. I think we must not be confused. If there have been improvements on that particular land, it's something that we'll discuss, but we're talking about land here. So I agree. In fact, even in the Constitution, if you can look, Section 25 talk about property, not land, but we're trying to amend Section 25. coming to the issue of the without compensation, I think we must be very clear here. What we are looking to do is the expropriation without compensation. We must not try to look at international laws and what. I think Honorable Sheikh has indicated here that it was part of the international people that took our land, the land that belonged to our forefathers. So we are trying now to address a South African issue. So to me, we must say clearly, with no ambiguity, expropriation of land without compensation. Thank you, Chair. I will come back later.
I think, to be fair to legal services, they must raise everything that is relevant. And international law is relevant. But Honorable Nolita, you are right. There was a meeting in Berlin in 1885 where the international community without African people decided to expropriate African land without paying them even a cent. So what we are saying is right. But the legal services have done their duty because they are saying there's an international law. South Africa is part of some of these international duties, and they are making a clear recommendation that we must invite trade and industry to brief us. But the briefing they are recommending does not invalidate, in my view, the point that you are making. Honorable Mahlatsi.
Thanks, Chair. I equally want to make contributions in as far as the presentation is concerned. One, I think the presentation spoke to four to five themes. My interest mainly is on the compensation part. I would agree with Honorable Nolita in as far as the compensation is concerned, that we move with the no compensation element. Secondly, who determines the compensation? I agree with the presentation on the view that we have the Office of the Vicar General as the determining body in as far as the compensation is concerned, and have where there are challenges in as far as disputes, therefore be deterred or referred to a relevant body. But in as far as the determination of compensation, it should be located in the Office of the Vicar General. Now, on the custodian element, it will be quite unfair if we are indeed redressing the injustice of the past, and the expectation be that the state therefore be the custodian of the land. Precisely because to whom are we addressing this injustice to? To whose benefit? Because the kings and queens of this country were the ones who were actually whom the land was taken from. Now, when you are addressing that particular element, you need to ensure that their land, which they are the actual custodian of, is not necessarily tampered with. Therefore, in as far as ownership, we need to look at multiple ownership for different purposes to different individuals or communities. For instance, issues of communal land, it can't be an issue that needs to be addressed through this particular process. That's my view, Chair. Now, lastly, on the, I've noted there's a slide that speaks about the cut-off date. This also speaks to what I've referred to in as far as custodianship of the land. Are we saying 1913 was the year when the process started or ended? What about before then? What happened before 1913? 1913 Act was part of the process to actually regularize what was done wrongly. Now we need to look into that fact and say, yes, we need to look back, but how far back, that's what we need to discuss in as far as the land question is concerned. On land and property, Chair, I'm not sure who spoke to this element that property is quite broad. You speak about debt, you speak about shares, you speak about everything else. Now, as far as the mandate of the National Assembly, to this particular ad hoc committee, it was precise to say we still stick to the land issue, the land issue. Issues of property, let's not even go that far. Let's deal with what has been mandated, what we have been mandated to do in this committee. Thanks, Chair.
You are touching something very important, because as we move around the country, you meet kings, queens, and communities who still have deep wounds because they have lost their people in wars of resistance. And that our constitution say we must heal the wounds of the past. And those wounds of the past are not what we think are actual wounds that people have suffered. So that's why we must listen to them and not rush into decisions which arrogate to ourselves the powers to feel the pain on behalf of other people. So we must be guided by the Constitution. There also the question of the cut-off date that we are raising is something that deserves our attention. And the question of property as well is wide, and as far as we are concerned now, doesn't fall within our mandate. And let's keep to our mandate until that mandate is changed. We are not at a point where we are entertaining the change of the mandate. We are still dealing with the situation as given by Parliament. Honorable Shibambe, I'll come back to you now.
Chair, I hope this process, this intervention is going to assist. Let's ask the content advisors and the advocate and yourself and all the parties to go and read the resolution that established the Constitutional Review Committee. So the resolution that we adopted as the National Assembly in February 2018, in terms of what has to be done, it says we instruct the Constitutional Review Committee to, number one, review and amend Section 25 of the Constitution to make it possible for the state to expropriate land for the public interest without compensation, and in the process conduct public hearings to get the views of ordinary South Africans, policymakers, civil society organizations and academics about the necessity of and mechanisms for expropriating land without compensation. That is one. And then it says two, you must check in the minutes of Parliament. Propose the necessary constitutional amendments with regard to the kind of future land tenure regime needed, taking into account the necessity of the state being a custodian of all South African land. It's in the minutes of Parliament. And then the resolution that established this committee, the minutes of Parliament, on Thursday, the 25th of July, it says to establish an ad hoc committee in terms of Rule 253 to, number one, initiate and introduce legislation amending Section 25 of the Constitution. And the second function, have regard to the work done and recommendations as contained in the reports of the Constitutional Review Committee and the previous ad hoc committee, which was established by the 5th Parliament. So to say that the issue of custodianship is not part of our mandate, it's legally and factually incorrect. Because this is what this committee has been mandated to do. Two functions. One, initiate and introduce legislation amending Section 25 of the Constitution. Two, have regard to the work done and the recommendations contained in the reports of the Constitutional Review Committee, which had a mandate to then deal with the issue of custodianship. If we are not sure about that, we can go back to the House to remandate the framework in terms of what happens. But I think that in the current framework, we can legitimately deal with the question of custodianship, because it's the only rational way of how we can deal with land redistribution in South Africa. Any other mechanism is going to be a whirlwind. We're just going to be like circling in the same area without moving forward. We're not going to be able to redress the imbalances of the past. And Chair, the context of the state being custodian of the land, it's honestly different from how the vulgarizers have wanted to put it. Because once the state is custodian of the land, you can still comply with the Constitution that certain land allocation responsibilities will be the functions of the municipality, as is outlined in Schedule 4, one of the schedules of the constitutions, of the Constitution, where you know that in terms of these land parcels, the municipality is responsible. In terms of these land parcels, the Department of Trade and Industry, in terms of special economic zones, is responsible. In terms of certain land parcels, the Department of Public Works is involved. In terms of certain land parcels, traditional leaders are involved as well, because the day you completely abolish traditional leaders' relationship with the land, the day you abolish the institution altogether. And within certain roles, that would have been defined. But that can only happen once you have got the custodianship by the state on behalf of the people. That is the essence of what we're dealing with. So it is not correct that our mandate is outside of that of that factor. We can solicit the minutes of Parliament and the proper resolutions, and then you will see that what we're saying is a reflection of reality.
Agree that as Parliament we must hear all voices, and that to make a determination of the kind that you are proposing would be putting the cart before the horse, because we have not heard all voices. We are still in a process of giving everybody a voice. And also that the playing field has got to be leveled, because when we come to a determination, we must be able to say all players were accessed equal rights, and then they had the time to play their role. So would you agree that we are not saying, ruling out the consideration of anything, but we are saying all voices that are relevant must be heard, and we have not reached that stage. Honorable Melda.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I would support what you're saying, that all voices should be heard. I think that's exactly what we are supposed to do. I've once again listened to the Honourable Shivambu, and I understand that that is the position of the EFF. The resolution that he refers to was the resolution originally in the beginning of 2018 giving a mandate to the Constitutional Review Committee. We are not the Constitutional Review Committee. The Constitutional Review Committee completed its task, and its report did not make provision for the land to be held in custodianship by the state. So it's technically correct. After that, there was another ad hoc committee that also did not propose custodianship. It's correct that the current resolution refers to the fact that we should take into consideration the work of the committees and whatever happened prior to this process. But in all the work prior to this, custodianship was not on the table.
Because the Constitutional Review Committee assisted us to deal with the question of desirability or otherwise of expropriation without compensation. And they did a good job, they finalized. And they enabled the National Assembly to establish this ad hoc committee and to give us the mandate to be here now. So I agree with you, Honorable Melda, that now we are in a new space, and then we must move from where we are. Any other? Honorable Dr. Gondwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Charmaine, I just need, there's something that is irking me a bit, or just bothering me. I wasn't at the workshop, so I just want to get clarity on I'm not sure whether it's a Professor Du Plessis or from University of Northwest. Is it a male or female? I'm not entirely sure, but you indicate here that this particular person or, academic had the view that expropriation is a legal technical term that always requires compensation. And then you then cited case law. 1915 appellate division decision. Now, I think the thing that bothers me is that you have this academic who took this particular view. Surely there must be a way of this case law. Can you just explain why, you know, there's a difference there? And I want to just confirm that this decision hasn't been overturned, because it's a 1915 decision. So if you could just provide clarity on that. And I tend to agree that we cannot ignore international customary law, especially where South Africa is signatory to treaties. And we have to ensure that we tread carefully in that sense, that we don't find ourselves, you know, in breach of any international treaties. So I think we do need to get the Department of Trade and Industry in to come and provide clarity in that sense. Thank you.
Advocate Fendermarabe, do you want to address us?
Thank you, Chairperson. What Professor Du Plessis, if she's a woman, what she said was that expropriation always comes with compensation. So if we look at international obligations, there seems to be a test that indicates compensation is payable, especially in respect of foreign-owned land. If we look at the Constitution, the word compensation is used. So I think her argument came from recent law to say, as we see expropriation now, it always has compensation, and if it doesn't, it means it is confiscation. So the 1915 case was by the appellate division back then. That was the highest court, so it would be precedent, and it's only the Constitution, in fact, that could then change from that. So what I was trying to say is that it is not correct to say that it is a term that must be accompanied with compensation. So we can't... If I can give another example, it's not 100% the same because expropriation and compensation is maybe, if we take compensation away, it would be taking rights away, whereas the example I'm going to give, we were adding rights to a term. But for instance, a couple of years back, the crime of rape was extended to include male rape. So if we, at that point in time, argued, but you can never include male rape in rape because the term is such an established legal terminology, and we must always just see it in that, that meaning, then we would not have been able to add to the term. So what I was trying to say is that if she's arguing that it is a legal technical term that always requires compensation, then no. In fact, there is case law where it wasn't regarded as including compensation. And then we also need to keep in mind that we are in fact saying that it is implicit in the Constitution that you do not have to pay compensation. So in fact, on all of those, it is not something that must follow. It is something that could be amended. But of course, I think the point that you made on international law is the one that we need to just be cautious of. I don't think it will stop us. We just need to be cautious.
I think we must allow academics to hold opinions, and opinions are as many as academics, so that is the opinion of that academic. Other academics will have other opinions, but as a representative of the people, we will look at all opinions and come to a determination that serves the interests of the people of South Africa. Honorable Shivambu.
Chair, the mandate of this committee, one is to initiate and introduce the Constitutional Review Amendment Bill, which is going to amend Section 25 of the Constitution, and two, is to give due regard to the Constitutional Review Committee report and the ad hoc committee of the 5th Democratic Parliament in terms of the issues that are contained there. It's not true, Honorable Mulder, that there's no issue of custodianship in the report. In page 9 of the report, which was adopted by the National Assembly, it says, to sum up the three broad views that had emerged as proponents of constitutional amendment and expropriation of land without compensation, namely that once expropriation of land without compensation was achieved, that the three options are: one, that the government should issue title deeds to the beneficiaries of the redistributive program, that is one; two, state custodianship of all land; three, explore of mechanisms of administration of communal land under traditional leadership. As part of our obligations, we must pay attention to what is in the Constitutional Review Committee. I would think that as part of this process, one, we should initiate the legislation. We must read this report together, because that is what Parliament said we must do as the committee. So to want to do something else is altogether problematic, and I can understand Freedom Front's point of departure, which is because if it were according to them, let's just leave things as they are now, that they are finding the status quo in terms of what happens. So there will always be an attempt to misinterpret what is there. Let us table Let us read sentence by sentence the entire Constitutional Review Committee report here. Let's read the Minutes of Parliament here. So that when we then deal with our functions, we know within which framework do we deal with all these issues and everything else. They can talk, and but this is what we have in before us now. It's documented in the Minutes of Parliament.
If we put the cart before the horse, the movement will stop. So let's not put the cart before the horse, but I want to agree with you. We have to initiate legislation. Would that therefore not mean that we must instruct legal services to start start the drafting process, and then as we receive inputs, then those inputs will affect the content of the draft, and then we will engage with the different drafts. So in other words, we are not talking at cross purposes. The process of drafting must begin, Advocate Van der Merwe and your team, but as and when we receive inputs, those inputs must be given equal weight so that the product at the end reflects the will of the people of South Africa as a whole. Would that, Honorable Melder, you had raised it.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Now I can live with what you are proposing. I don't have a problem with that. I don't want us to be unsure in terms of our mandate and what happened. And I would like to thank the Honorable Shivambu for enlightening us by reading to us from the minutes. But that exactly proves my argument. The report clearly states that there was a view. There is still a view. It's the AS view. It's not a new view. So it was not a recommendation or something that was accepted by that proposal. It was a recommendation. It was a view. So that view still exists. It's not that important. I think we should stick to what we are busy with and what you just proposed, and I don't have a problem with that.
You know, views get recorded. And if two views are recorded and they are not adopted as a resolution, those views don't become a resolution. Honorable Shwambe, you want to comment?
Chair, do you know it's very evident that the Freedom Front has not read this report. The parliamentary sitting that established us, this ad hoc committee of the sixth parliament, says we must have due regard of the Constitutional Review Report. The Constitutional Review Report says, go and expropriate, go and amend to expropriate, to permit for expropriation without compensation, and you will decide on what then happens once expropriation has happened. So it's our mandate, it's quite our mandate. If you read that report, give yourself time to read that report tonight, and then when we come back on Friday, you will then appreciate that we have that mandate to say what then happens once we have empowered the state to expropriate that compensation. She suggests that we must have a multi-tiered land tenure and security of tenure. Yes, multiple forms of tenure in terms of how it must be dealt with. The Constitutional Review Committee dealt with that, but we are mandated by the Constitutional Review Report, which we are mandated to interact with. To, amongst other things, looks into the issue of custodianship. And of course, we will express our views even in the legislation itself. If we do not agree, we will say that we do not agree that there must be custodianship of the state, but to say that it is not part of the framework is opportunistic and it's decidedly wrong, and we shouldn't entertain it in that format. So I agree with you much more concretely now that let the legal office start the drafting of the constitutional amendment bill. And then when we then come to talk, we talk from a bill that is there so that we know that this is how the text is going to look like. We'll say this because at some stage in the fifth parliament, when we thought that the ruling party is not going to go ahead with the constitutional amendment, we had already started a process of introducing a private member's bill as a constitutional review bill, which already had waiting in terms of what could happen. So we'll of course bring it to the table as well to say that this is how we think the formulation should be, and the legal office can come and say this is how the formulation should be, and we openly debate. If we do not find each other, we'll go to Parliament to then find each other in terms of what happens. But I know that ultimately we have got a mandate to amend to permit for expropriation without compensation of land. The modalities will be dealt with. That is what we are supposed to be dealing with here. I'm just pleading that the Freedom Front must read before they come to the committee, because it's wasting our time.
Jefferson, thank you very much. I decided to keep quiet for a while so that I can get the flow, and the flow is very simple. We are in agreement, Jefferson, on the mandate as given by Parliament. I have not had any dissent view to that. But what I see and feel, being a little bit of a snake, is with regard to the modus operandi. You see, if they say go to Joburg, you don't just wake up and start walking. You will have to resolve and agree whether you are flying, driving, walking, or you are going to use the donkey cart. So my understanding is, flowing from the workshop, there were views presented, which views were not contradicting the expropriation of land without compensation. They were there in any case, but let's take them as by-the-way views. But the main views which came out of the workshop were in support of the mandate at our disposal. Now, my understanding was, in this meeting, inter alia, what is our job and duty is to see if from the workshop there is any view which has been left out, which view could come to our assistance, which view will be able to assist us with, on the point of the modus operandi, to say, inasmuch as we are agreeable to the expropriation of land without compensation, how then are we doing it? Mark you, this is a sensitive issue by itself. We cannot just fall over it and run the risk of plunging ourselves to be hauled to court and saying, here you have made mistake with all these bright and brilliant brains. Let's do it according to the instruction and the mandate from Parliament, but at the same time, tightening any possible loose end which could plunge us into unnecessary courts of law. It's a route to take, but how we take it is also equally important. Thank you very much.
I tend to agree with the Honorable Rosetta that we are in agreement that there must be compensation without expropriation, without compensation. And secondly, that we must allow legal services to start the redrafting process, and maybe we should say, instead of meeting on Friday, we give all the parties that have submissions to make until Friday to make submissions, and then we meet the other week so that we can entertain all the submissions. And then to take on board what Honorable Shimambo is saying, we get legal services to actually look at the minutes, the mandate, and give us an advice on the matter, so that we don't fight unnecessarily. Because we can read the same sentence and understand it differently, and there's nothing wrong in that. Some of us, like myself, are slow learners. We need more time to understand. Honorable Matata.
Thanks, Chair. I think I agree with your proposal, but furthermore, I would propose that trade and industry be invited the same week, because these issues of our treaties and so forth and so on must not come and haunt us at a later stage in as far as the drafting of the bill and so forth. So can we get trade and industry to clarify certain issues same week, so that as we move holistically, comprehensively so. Thanks, Chair.
I think, Honorable Mahlatsi, that should not be debatable. There are certain positions. You have the Security Council. It was established by international law. But we say when it was established, we were not there. We wanted to be restructured. But you don't just walk out of situation. So if trading industry come and brief us, we will take informed decisions. And we are a parliament of the people. We can't take arbitrary decisions. So I guess everybody will agree that we'll invite trade and industry, and we'll ask the secretariat to draft the letter, which I'll sign. Honorable...
Thank you, Chairperson. If I understand correctly, then there will not be a meeting on Friday.
On Friday, yes.
The inputs that you ask from the parties will not be on the bill. But we haven't seen that. It will be on this document, I guess.
Yes, if the parties feel...
Would like to make an input.
Yes,
just
yes.
The last point, Honourable Chairperson. Yeah. The party I belong to, we tend to read stuff. Honourable Shivambu shouldn't be too concerned. We do read stuff. But I also want to have us not to be under misconception. I think there's agreement in this committee that the mandate from Parliament needs us to look at expropriation without compensation. However, that does not mean that the parties participating all agree with the content of the idea involved.
You see, I learned something from President Cyril Ramaphosa when he chaired the National Assembly, that something called a sufficient consensus, which means that consensus doesn't mean 100%, but would we agree that we have sufficient consensus to move forward?
Chair, you had already summarized the way forward.
No,
I don't know what the...
You know, let's not suppress one another.
The chair
has time to listen to all of you.
May I react to sufficient consensus? I was there as well. And we all know that it meant if the ANC and the National Party agreed there was sufficient consensus, we all know what happened to the National Party.
The ANC and the Nationalist Party helped us. That's why we are still here, thanks to our icon Nelson Mandela. Honorable Shivambo, you say we agree so we can...
Just a plea that can we avoid meetings on Friday, because all of us are committed to this process, so we can meet Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. And we avoid this thing of Friday meetings because we must deal with constituency work as well. What together?
Oh, Chairperson.
So it's a resolution.
Honorable
Chairperson, may I on that point strongly support Mr. Shivambu?
I think... Can we note the historic agreement between Dr. Melder and Honorable Shivambo and say that we'll make the necessary recommendation to the programming committee? to help us find another suitable date. But honorable members, thank you very much. We are really grateful that you are steering the ship very well in the interest of all our people, and the meeting is adjourned.